Good morning. I'm Scott J. Peterson from Liquid Daffodil, and this is Jeff Procise from Wintellect. How are you? Good morning.
Doing well this morning.
Got a lot of great stuff to cover here. This is Web and Data Application Development with Visual Studio 2017, and Azure just had a lot of great announcements. Let's kind of cover what we're going to talk about in this session. Session one, remember, we're going to break this down into six sessions. A lot of stuff we're going to talk about. Session one is going to cover .NET Core, ASP.NET Core and Application Insights. And realistically, we're going to be building this cool ASP.NET Core solution. That's session one. Session two, we're going to introduce some ideas around data storage, Azure SQL, SQL Server 2016, and Azure Storage, but more specifically, we're going to talk about Azure Object Storage, which a lot of you guys will know is Blob Storage. It's got a better name now, more descriptive name. Session three, we're going to talk about Azure Functions and Cognitive Services, two of my favorite things. In fact, honestly, what we're going to do is we're going to take a bunch of these old school kind of legacy concepts. We're going to move everything into Azure Functions. And then four, this is for all of those decision makers and stakeholders out there. They're going to be drooling when they get to this. This is going to be Power BI and Office Graph. And this is going to be a session, some content for Office Graph that's going to be way different than any of the stuff that I've presented for Office Graph. And then five, we're going to talk about Azure Search and Luis. And so as a note, throughout this entire session, I'm going to pronounce every technology correctly. So for those of you that are home wondering how you pronounce these things, Luis, L-U-I-S, Language Understanding Intelligence Services, pronounced Luis. You'll notice that I'm going to be saying Azure.
Not Azure.
Not Azure, which is fine, but if you want to pronounce it correctly, you'll say Azure. There's hundreds of thousands of people now that are mad that I said that, but we're going to be talking about that. And then here's the big one in six. We're going to talk about Docker, Azure Container Registry. You'll notice I didn't say Azure Container Services. Azure Container Registry, Linux, and here's a weird one, SQL Server for Linux. We're going to talk about that. So that's the way it's going to break down. And this is the way that the solution is put together. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here. We decided, 24 different tools, technologies, and services. In the first one, we're just going to talk about ASP.NET Core and Application Insights. Those are going to be integrated into the solution. But then we're going to throw in Azure SQL, SQL Server, Azure Object Storage, and a little bit of the computer vision. That's part of the cognitive services. We're not going to talk about it heavy, but it's in there for us to follow up and talk about it later in sessions four and five. And then we're going to throw in some Azure Document DB and Azure Functions. Document DB is a very cool, heavily misunderstood service that's out there in Azure. We're going to talk about it. By the time we're done, my guess is you'll know exactly what it is, how cool it is, how to use it, and how to integrate it. More importantly, how to integrate it in your ASP.NET Core solutions with Visual Studio 2017.
And I'm betting a lot of people that are watching probably don't even know what Azure Functions are. So you and I are both pretty excited about these things, and we want to incorporate these into the solution, let you see what they are. I think a lot of you are going to go away with ideas about how you can use it then in your own software and your own architecture. So I'm really looking forward to that part.
Yeah, so am I. So I'm an Azure Functions guy. In fact, I never use this term because it makes me sound extra dorky, but Azure Functions are the fishizzle. They really are. I mean, okay, sound dorky, but it's true. Azure Functions are really the next step in technology. Okay, so then we're going to hit Office Graph and Power BI, throw those in. And then, as I mentioned, Azure Search and Luis. And then the grand slam will be that then we're going to talk about putting this all into Linux. And as far as I know, we're just going to do all this local. We're just going to do all this local and everything else, and maybe we'll make the code available to everybody afterwards. We'll see. We'll see what happens. So that being said, why don't we get in to .NET Core session one, get in some content. By the way, we kind of have two choices here. We can spend a lot of time in slides, and I could read the slides to you, or we can spend a little bit of time in slides and talk about code. Write code, configure services. Which do you prefer?
So as a developer myself, mm-hmm. I can confidently predict most of them would vote for fewer slides and more code.
Okay, so let's do that. So yeah. if I rush through a slide, it's not because the content's not important. I may rush through a slide because I'm so excited about the code that we're writing. I'm just going to tell you right now. We just want to get to that code. So for those of you that are watching, and here's the truth, I know that there's people watching right now that have actually not used any Microsoft tools or technologies. They're watching just out of interest. We've got the whole gamut of folks out there, people that are .NET core gurus and everything in between. But I want to give a quick recap of .NET Core just so that we're on the same page. So .NET Core is cross-platform, and by cross-platform or xPLAT, what we're really talking about here is the ability to write code that will easily, seamlessly run on Windows, Linux, and Mac. Okay? So if you have some other platform beyond that, maybe there's a platform that exists, we're not really talking about, but this is going to be Mac, Linux, Windows. .NET Core is clean, zero dependencies. This means that once you have the .NET Core stuff involved, there's nothing else that you need. There's no other dependencies with that. And then a couple of things that I love about .NET Core is that this is referred to, .NET Core is referred to as collaborative open source, and that it's facilitated by Microsoft. And so the concept here is that it's open source. Everybody can see the code. Everybody can contribute, participate in the code. But also that there's some kind of organizing group that's, I'm not going to use the word monitoring it, but for some doing some due diligence on .NET Core as an open source scenario.
I agree with you, and maybe a good term is they're orchestrating it, just kind of keeping an eye on things and helping out where needed. I don't know about you, Scott, but my experience with open source is that the most successful open source projects are ones where it's not just a free for all, but there is someone sitting at the top, facilitating, orchestrating, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the other benefit that I like about having stuff open source is that we can see the code. So we can see the code. I know that other smart people can see the code because I'm kind of a lazy developer. I like the idea that the really smart people that are out there can go in, take a look at this code, and if there's enhancements that need to be made, or there's some cool ideas, they can participate that in the they can participate in that part of the process. But the other part I like about being able to see the code is sometimes something goes wrong and I just don't know what's going wrong. This is very similar to me back in the day when we first used to be able to get debug symbols for dependencies, where I might get Stack Overflow or out of memory or some crazy thing like that, or the glare from your teeth is causing a conflict with the graphics card, right? Whatever it is, I didn't know what in the heck was going on. Well, with being able to see the debug symbols, I could go in and kind of get an idea for that and write some better code. Same thing with open source now. I may have this really reduces support, this reduces frustration. I can maybe go in and at the end of the day write a little bit better code because I can see what's happening under the covers. And there's a final note on this, that everything Microsoft uses Core at the core. This means ASP.NET Core, underneath it, is going to be .NET Core. So just so that we really kind of understand that idea, underneath ASP.Core is .NET Core. It's built on the runtime components, the compilers and runtime components, and it's really designed to be lean and mean, but you can extend this however you want. So the great thing about ASP.NET Core is that you build it on the .NET Core framework, you're guaranteed that it's going to work on Linux, Mac, and Windows. If for some reason you want to diverge from that and start writing some code that's only supported in the framework, you can do that just by adding it. Remember, because we have no core dependencies, but we can just add these dependencies onto it. In my experience is most stuff that I care about ports. I mean, I write software for large companies all the time, and almost everything ports. In fact, I found that if it's not compliant, .NET Core compliant or ASP.NET Core compliant, it's because the operating system itself doesn't support something. It's not because there's a limitation in .NET Core. There may be things that are just not available on Linux or on a Mac. So ASP.NET Core, and that's going to be the foundation of the solution that we write here. And now this slide's kind of a marketing slide. We can throw this up anyway, but here's why I stick this up here, because I deal with people, developers of all types, Most of them are Microsoft people or have been in Microsoft shops. And there's been some resistance. It's not resistance. There's been some fear. I'm telling you, some of us got scared when people said, hey, this Linux stuff is really cool. This Mac stuff is cool. I want to start embracing this. They said, oh, but I'm doing all this cool stuff and it won't be supported, or I won't be able to do it, or how am I going to transition this? Maybe you're an old web forms guy. You know, maybe you're some doing, you're on a contract right now or working for a company, some of this legacy stuff. My experience is that there is support for everything that you want to do, or just about everything. And this means third parties, other open source scenarios, other third parties. There's extensions, or there's NuGet packages or Bower packages for just about every single thing that you want to do. All right, so ASP.NET Core. ASP.NET Core is seriously, and this is amazing, but it's just a console app that creates a web server. And it doesn't even create a web server. I'm going to say it creates a web server. But this is the kind of code you're looking at to create a .NET Core, an ASP.NET Core app. This is it. We've got this program, CS file. It's going to have one line of code to spin up that web host builder, and then it's going to run. And it may seem that I'm caring too much about this, but this is a huge deal. We're not talking about needing IIS in the mix. We're not talking about needing a web server. This gives us the ability to just write a line of code or two and have a fully functioning site. And the big thing here for a lot of folks, again, if you're coming from the ASP web forms world or other scenarios, is ASP.NET Core is no longer based on system.web.dll, which I feel sad for it. This has been a mainstay for web developers for a long, long time, but system.web.dll is no longer required. The cool thing about ASP.NET Core and .NET Core is that you have these, what they call well-factored NuGet packages, right? And you only add what you need.
You know, that concept, Scott, I think is particularly appealing. I've been dealing with ASP.NET since version 1, actually since before version 1. Mm-hmm. And while there were a lot of great things about it, one of the things that was less optimal was just how big it was. You know, in the original ASP.NET, so many things were turned on by default. There wasn't a lot of factoring. So just to reiterate here, with ASP.NET Core, think of a minimalist design where you start with the bare bones basics, but then you build around that. You add what you need with no overhead imposed by things that you don't need. So a little bit different from the design philosophy for the early ASP.NET, but very, very cool.
Yeah, very cool. And we're actually going to show some of this. In fact, we're going to go through a little bit of an exercise in a minute here to show how quick and easy and lightweight that is before we get into our real solution. So here are some of the key changes. So we're talking about Visual Studio 2017. We're talking about the latest version of .NET Core. So if we take a look at the key changes here in this slide, one of the big things that we're going to talk about, we're not really going to talk a lot about it, but this is going to freak some people out right from the start, especially if you're like me and you have been doing a lot of development with Azure Functions or UWP or some of these other things and you've gotten used to and have fallen in love with project.json. So ASP.NET Core project.json is gone. The dependencies are now referenced back in the project file. And I actually don't know the specific technical reasons why this is in place. All I know is that we've been told it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be better this way. So I have confidence that it will be better, but that's going to be the first thing that happens when you create a new ASP.NET Core solution. If you've been walking the trail and sort of maintaining the newer concepts in .NET Core, this might freak you out a minute and you might think there's something wrong with your project. We're going to show a couple of things to help you make that transition, but those dependencies are all now back in that project file. And honestly, I don't know if this is the final resting place for these kind of dependencies. We're still relying on JSON. JSON is beautiful. When we take a look at Azure Functions, we've still got a project.json out there. We're still recommending that you use appsettings.json, for example. All of that stuff's there. It's just not this project file. There's also some new publishing concepts in here. We're going to show a couple of these, but Visual Studio 2017 is really getting to the point that you kind of can just say publish and pick any kind of scenario that you want. I mean, you can, it used to be that you kind of had like a web deploy or an FTP, and then we kind of started getting into this Azure app service sort of scenario. Visual Studio 2017 just blows this away. And remember, this is still the release candidate, so I can only imagine that this is just going to be extended. But the ability to publish to staging or production, multiple environments, to orchestrate those kind of deployments and publishing, all of this has just gotten really great in Visual Studio 2017. And then one more key change is the new Docker Project Plus solution support. So if you've been kind of following along, starting with about, I think, update 3 for 2015, you have the ability to install some Docker tools for Windows or some extensions for VS. And you've got this new Docker project support. So this has taken this one more step. We're now going to have the ability to add Docker project and or solution support. And the reason why this is so cool is because not only is this whole concept of deploying to a Docker container and deploying to Azure Container Services or through the registry or Docker Hub or whatever, not only is that getting way easier, with this new solution support, there can be the orchestration, the compose part and the orchestration of that. So if we have a solution that has multiple projects that are dependent on each other, we need to orchestrate that somehow, totally built in. Another one that we're going to look at, just mentioned briefly, is the new service capabilities. This is kind of a transition from connected services. So if you remember, as Visual Studio 2015 got down the road, new menu items started to appear. One of those was this concept of connected services, which was really cool because you could do things like this. You could say, I have created an Azure API app that exists out there in some region. I'd like to just bring that into my project. And the way that you used to do that would be you'd spin up an HTTP client, call a URL, do things like that with the permissions and, what does this look like? And it used to be back in the web service disco days, it would create this sort of disco file where you could know about all the methods and everything. Well, connected services then would let you sort of see the methods and schema that were available for your API app. And you used to be able to just connect to that. Well, in Visual Studio 2017, they've consolidated a bunch of those pieces into what's being referred to as service capabilities. And there's the tooling in place so that you could just connect to a service. So as an example, if right now you load up Visual Studio 2017 and you create an ASP.NET Core app and you go to service capabilities, you could add, for example, Azure Storage as a service, and it'll let you connect to one of your storage units, or you could create that as well. And what happens realistically, technically, is it's going to pull in the NuGet packages that are required. It's going to pull in files that are required. It's actually going to create a little folder structure for you. I've even noticed that it creates an HTML getting started for that specific technology. This is one of the recommended ways, or will be one of the recommended ways, for example, to add application insights. We're not doing that in this demo. It's not quite ready yet. We're going to kind of do it in a little bit trickier way. But this new service capabilities thing is cool for another reason. Service capabilities gives us the ability to have this third-party service concept out there where you could actually create third-party service capabilities that could be reused in Visual Studio 2017 as well. So there's another opportunity for this share. Right? Share these services. I don't know if these are going to be paid or not or what it is. I don't think any NuGet packages are paid, right? A NuGet package, you just pull it in, right? I think the concept is going to be the same. And speaking of NuGet packages, we have this new consolidated dependency management. That's my word, consolidated dependency management. The example that I use here that I love is I love Bootstrap. I'm a Bootstrap guy. But it used to be managing some of those references to jQuery or Bootstrap or any of those sort of client-side dependencies. That was great, but then when there was a versioning issue or when something got updated or something happened, you may be out of date. So you'd bring something in and you'd have to, pull it, change your HTML or pull the CDN or wherever you're pulling it from. Consolidated dependency management gives us the ability to do this not just with NuGet packages where you could say, you know, search for packages, see what's installed, see, look for updates and consolidate those. But we can do this now, for example, with Bower. So if we want to have a, you know, jQuery or a cool drop zone or something like that, we can just manage these things through the consolidated dependency management. We're going to look at that.
It's one of my favorite features of Visual Studio 2017, by the way. You know, we're all familiar with DLL hell. We've all been in that one time or another. There's a new DLL hell for developers these days on the client side.
Yes.
You know, it's not unusual, especially in an enterprise-type application, web application, to see dozens, sometimes more than 100 different dependencies on the client side for various JavaScript libraries, things like that. You know, same in Node with NPM packages. The fact that they've brought all this together into one place so that I can manage those dependencies, more easily figure out what is broken when something does break, to me, that's a productivity gain right there that I would have paid for.
Yeah, and I agree. And so here's the funny thing. As I was originally preparing this content, I wasn't aware of this. And I was doing it the old-fashioned way, and it was so super cumbersome. And I got to the point that I said, I'm going to rebuild this entire solution and do it the right way in Visual Studio 2017. And I couldn't believe. In fact, I thought at first it might not work because it was so simple. I thought, this can't really work that it's so simple, but it does. So here's what I want to do, Jeff. I'd like to go out, and I want to create actually a quick .NET Core app without tooling. And this is going to be an ASP.NET Core session, this whole solution. But I want to create a .NET Core app without tooling just so that everybody sees how simple it is. Because remember, there's people out here that are like me, these, you know, boring sort of corporate guys that are working, have been working on, you know, web solutions for a long time. They haven't even touched this stuff at all, and they haven't touched one of the coolest things that I think has happened in the last year or so, which is VS Code. They haven't even touched it. They don't know how easy it is. And then we're going to go out and we're going to open up the solution that we've created, which has been all shelled out already. It's going to be this really cool solution that we've created that's going to use cognitive services to analyze images and tag and caption images. It's going to be an ASP.NET Core app. We're going to open that up and sort of look at that and add a little code to that to take some steps to get data in and application insights eventually in there. And we're going to talk real quick, just hit this idea of middleware, extensions, plugins, that kind of stuff. For folks that have done zero MVC, or they want to be sure that the latest version of ASP.NET Core is going to work the way that they'd expect, and we're going to go in and take a look at that. So what do you think?
I think it sounds like a lot of fun.
All right. So let's flip over. I'm going to go right to my desktop. Yep. And so just as a note here, you're not looking at the slides here at this point, but these slides are available. If you want to follow along, these slides are available online. You can get them. They're available to you, and you can follow along. I might throw in a couple of things that aren't in the slides, so just be prepared. But in general, the slides that are out there are the slides that you can follow along with. So here's how simple it's going to be to create a .NET Core app. And again, this is fundamental. This is rudimentary. But I just really want to show for those of you, the thousands of you that are watching that have not gone through this process, how quick this is. So I'm at a command prompt. You remember the command prompt, right? I work with guys that have never used a command prompt. They're going to have to fall in love with the command prompt now. But so at a command prompt, I'm just going to say cd hello connect. So I'm just, actually we're going to do md. We're going to make a directory, hello connect. And then I'm going to say cd hello connect to get in there. And now I'm going to say .NET new. And that would actually create me a C-sharp application, but I'm just going to give it a template. I'm going to say template web. And it says create a new C-sharp project. And I'm just going to say code dot, which is just going to open up Visual Studio Code in that folder. And now we've got a fully functioning ASP.NET web application. But I want to point out the program CS. So if you can see this is it. This is just like our slide. There's only one difference in this between this and our slide, and I want to pull this out because this scares some developers. We see this use IIS integration. This is a scenario where developers immediately say, holy smokes, I want this to go to Linux. I want it to go to Mac. I know there's not going to be IIS out there. There's no location I'm going to deploy it to. This helps in to connect to your local host when you're going through the process. This will not affect your ability to port this in any way. I could take this out. This is what's really going to get sent out there. Okay? So the cool thing here is this doesn't look like there's a lot that's happening, but if I go to the terminal, I could say .NET restore, and you notice that that's going to go through the restore process just like you normally would through a restore in Visual Studio IDE. I can say .NET build, that's going to build that project, and it's going to throw out some output there. But then if I say .NET run, here's what I want everybody to pay attention to. When I say .NET run, developers do this and they say, you know, where is it? Where is it running? What's happening here? You'll notice this says at the bottom that we're a localhost. It's listening on localhost 5000. So if I go now out to localhost 5000, you can see that down here in the console, it's happening, and there it is. There's a fully functioning ASP.NET Core app that's out there. So some people are watching this saying, oh, yeah, I know how to do this, but there's a whole bunch of people that don't realize that what I just did is I brought up a command prompt. I typed in a couple of things that pulled it up, and then I ran, and this is an entire solution out here. And I use the ASP.NET Core web template, but you can use all kinds of templates, and there's third-party templates. You could use something from Yo, where you could pull in something that would be a little, you know, have authentication in here, or do things like that. So super powerful. But let's go into Visual Studio now and talk about if we were to create a real solution, what that might look like. So let me close that up, pull up Visual Studio, and this is the solution that we've created for these sessions. This is a cool ASP.NET Core application using the latest, greatest of everything that's called Tagger. And here's the idea, and that's Tagger, T-A-G-U-R. Here's the idea here, is we thought it would be cool for developers to see an example, as we mentioned earlier, where of a solution that would integrate all kinds of really great stuff into an ASP.NET Core solution. So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff in Azure, all kinds of stuff in cognitive services, all kinds of ways that you can connect to data, everything. But we're going to do it in this solution that is going to give us the ability to upload images and have them captioned, tagged, use some intelligence there, you know, and walk through that process. This is something that almost everybody wishes that they had. Most people have tons of images. They have tons of photos on their phone or photos that are hanging around, bunch of stuff out in OneDrive or Google Drive or wherever it is that they've got their photos. And most people wish that those had captions, or especially that those were tagged and categorized so that when you go out, you could say, you know, show me everything that's ocean or a boat or something like that. Now, some services sort of do this. OneDrive and some other services will make an attempt to caption them, but they're not very good. They're just really not very good. Cognitive services that we're going to look at in a little bit will, you know, populate this with all kinds of tags, even mark whether there's a celebrity in the photo or something else like that. So we've got this solution that's been created out here called Tagger. And I want to point out just a couple of things right off the bat before we forget. Remember we talked about project.json being gone. You'll notice project.json's not in here. I'm going to open up the project file here. I'll just say edit that csproj. If we scroll down, we'll see these package references here. Okay, so if you're doing this and you're like, where do these exist? And maybe I'm having a problem with it. Because remember, this is RC. It's a release candidate. If you're having a problem with something and you think it might be related to a versioning issue or something with NuGet packages, you can still find them in here and manage them this way if you really want to. But the primary thing I want to point out here is this package target fallback. If we take a look at this line of code right here, this is for every single person that's watching this that's going to spin up Visual Studio 2017. They're going to create a new ASP.NET Core solution. This is a good time to say you will see three variations out there. You'll see ASP.NET Core Framework, ASP.NET Core Core, and ASP.NET Framework. You'll see those three variations of templates. What we're using here is ASP.NET Core Core. That means it starts out with just nothing. But one thing that you'll notice with Visual Studio 2017 release candidate, and I don't know what the final result will be in the final release, you know, the pure version one of this, is that there are some problems bringing in some NuGet packages that there shouldn't be. These are 100% compliant, .NET Core compliant NuGet packages that we know work, but for some reason you're not able to bring them in. I'm going to show you the trick right now so that you will never have this problem. If you take a look at this line of code where it says package target fallback, if you were to pull up a solution right now, your line of code here in the XML markup is going to look different. Do this. Change it so it says target framework equals to Net Core App 1.0, and pay attention to this .NET 5.6 that I put in here. Here's what this line of code is basically saying. It's saying if this package is a .NET Core 1.0, if it meets these criteria, as a fallback, see if this package is compliant with one of these things, .NET 5.6, portable, .NET 4.5, and Win 8. Your line of code may look a little bit different. It may actually refer to WPA 8.1 in there, a couple of different things. But the primary thing you want to put in here is that, let me scroll back to that, this .NET 5.6. And don't freak out. You're thinking .NET, maybe that's the full framework, or what in the heck is this? This is not the final line of code that you're going to have in here. But if you change this to this, now every single truly compliant .NET Core NuGet package will come in. And the reason I know this is because one of the cool things that you want to bring in is Application Insights. Application Insights will typically fail if your line of code does not look like that. Okay, so great. And again, if you guys need to, go back and take a look in this video to get this line of code. We can make this line of code available to you. And again, I can't guarantee that that's going to be true in the final version, but it is right now if you want to get productive right now. The other thing I want to do is look at the startup, and I want to talk about this idea of the builder and the middleware. I'm just going to rush through these quickly because some of these are old concepts if you're an MVC guy or if you're a .NET Core guy. But see that we're still using appsettings.json, and we're saying we can actually target different environments, staging, production, development, whatever. So this stays here. Appsettings.json stays here. In fact, I've got one here. Here's the appsettings.json that we're going to be using here. This should look familiar to anybody. You'll see that we've got connection strings for storage accounts, connection strings for SQL Server databases, et cetera, et cetera. We've also got in services, now these overloads vary slightly for .NET Core. The overloads are slightly different, but they shouldn't confuse you in any way. We've got this concept of services and configuration. We've also got this concept of middleware. So this should look very familiar to every MVC person. So by default, a .NET Core solution is not using MVC. We say app dot, you know, for the application builder, use MVC. We have to tell it to use MVC. If I have static files like an index.html that's going to be in here, if I'm not going to be truly using only the controller view concept, I've got some static files, I'll say use static files. Let's just go ahead and add in support here, though, for data so that we can see how we can spin up a database context. So remember, in this entire session, we're going to be bouncing to all kinds of data sources. We're going to be having Azure SQL, we're going to be having SQL Server 2016, we're going to be using object storage, as you know, blob storage. But we want to spin up a context that is smart right from the start. So let me add this, and this code is going to do two things. Number one, it's going to go out and create a strongly typed object from that appsettings.json, and I'm going to bring those back as storage account settings. I'll get rid of that extra add options in there now. I've got a connection string that's going to come from a little class here that I've got, and this connection string is going to be really smart. It's going to say, Are you running locally? Are you running on Azure? Are you running SQL Server 2016? It's going to be really smart. And then it's going to use this service, add DP context, and create this tags context. And we're going to extend this. And the part of this scenario here is this cool idea of code first, where we've got class files that are really just loosely connected to our data. We can make changes in either place. But we're also using this .useSQL server. So we're saying useSQL server, and this is going to let us connect to pretty much any SQL server in any location that we want to, if it's Azure SQL or SQL Server 2016 or whatever. Okay, so if we pull this up now, we've got database support here. We've got just this mostly plain vanilla MVC. We've got views. We've got controllers. In fact, in this solution so far, I've just got a home controller, a whole bunch of stuff that people don't have to be afraid of. This is just standard stuff so far. We're using one technique that I love, which is this more recent ability to have render partials. So as we go through this code, we're going to have these render partials, which makes our code extra smooth. But let's take a look real quick at this idea of managing the dependencies. So remember I said we have consolidated dependency management. Notice how under dependencies now we have NuGet and Bower. Now what you would have seen in earlier versions with Bower is Bower would have had a separate folder in the structure. And depending on what update you were using with Visual Studio, you might be able to right-click over that actual Bower folder and do some things with it. But this puts it all in one place and makes it really easy to manage. So just as if we were managing a NuGet package, so if I said manage NuGet packages here, you can see that we've got browse, everything that's installed, everything that's updated. We can now do the same thing with Bower packages, manage Bower packages. And so you'll see here that I'm using Bootstrap, which by the way, I just am a Bootstrap guy. I love Bootstrap. Using jQuery, using the cool drop zone. I don't know if folks have ever used this, but the drop zone gives us the ability to have file, drag and drop file stuff instead of using, for example, the old form post with the button, right, submit, browse, submit, that old ugly thing. And so we're managing all of these things through the consolidated package manager here. And then we can also see if updates are available and manage them this way. Just say update and then all of it's done. We can even do things related to pre-release, just like we can with NuGet packages there. Okay, so let's take a look at what this app will look like. Just load this up here. Remember, this ASP.NET Core solution using the .NET Core template, ASP.NET Core solution using the .NET template using jQuery, Bootstrap, stuff that everybody should be totally familiar with. And so here's the idea here is that we've got this app, Tagger. We can just say get started, and we've got this drop zone here. And we could just say, you know what, let's just upload a photo, and we'll upload a photo here. And then it's going to go out and see if it can tag this photo. Now, I honestly don't know if this is even going to work. We're not at this point, but there it did. It says it's a vase with flowers in it. As a note, here's one fun thing as we're going through these sessions. We're going to be using the super cool computer vision API from Cognitive Services that will auto-caption, tag, do a whole bunch of analysis on these images. But one of the fun things about it is it's not perfect. So this is close, a vase with flowers in it. It is a flower. I'm amazed at how spot on it is. Most of the time it's spot on. But one fun experiment as we go through this is to upload photos and to see how it actually gets captioned, right? Some of them are really funny. And I don't know if this is true. I wish there was a cognitive services or a computer vision guy that was on the team with us. Because here's something I've noticed. If something is really weird, if an image is really weird and has spots, it always will return a caption of two giraffes looking at the screen. So we may see that as well. But okay, so we see that this is working, ASP.NET Core solution, but I want to add application insights into this. So before we get any further in this, let's flip back over to this slide deck. By the way, we're going to have fun in this session. We may even make mistakes in this session. Everything may crash, and it doesn't matter, because if we're not having fun, we're not doing it right. So let's flip back over to the slide deck and talk about application insights here for a minute. Now, application insights has been around for a couple of years. And I hesitated even putting in this session because if you're like me, you were kind of weird about Application Insights. A lot of times Application Insights wanted to be added by default all the time, and you felt, oh my gosh, how do I get rid of Application Insights? It's always in here, blah, blah, blah. And here's why, is because I had no idea how awesome Application Insights were. I mean, it's only been maybe the last 6 months that I've realized how phenomenal it is, because Application Insights is way more than just what this slide says, detecting and diagnosing issues in web apps and services. It does all of this, but it's way more than this. In fact, as I got through developing real solutions, because remember, I create software for like companies that are fairly large. They could have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users, and they have huge departments that may want to see a bunch of this information. I realized this is one of the best sales and marketing tools that you could possibly get for demographics and different breakdowns and things like that, because Application Insights will do everything we see on this slide, but we have all kinds of information and all kinds of tools that get sent back that as a developer, I might care, but if I'm being a good citizen, I'm gonna use it because now all of a sudden the marketing people have information, the salespeople, the finance people, maybe even the legal people, they have all kinds of information available through the tools. So Application Insight tools that are available right now, we've got the dashboards and navigation that you'll see in the portal. We have an application map that is kind of cool, and this is kind of the way that it sounds, almost like a site map, but it's based on tiers and technology. So the map would say, here's what you've got going on server side, here's what you've got going on client side. We've got a search explorer and a metrics explorer, which gives us the ability to search through all of this great data. So a way that I explain it to developers is, imagine back in the olden days when you had to parse through IIS logs and you tried to figure out the good stuff that was in IIS logs. Imagine if it had that and a million other things and a really easy way to search, navigate, and report on this information. Because Application Insights is about intelligence. We're actually getting intelligence about the way that our app is performing. And it's not just performing from a performance standpoint, but what in the heck is going on with this app in a positive way, right? Where are my users? Where's the breakdown? Let me see a chart of it. And gives us the ability to roll all these things up into some great dashboards. In fact, a little bit later, we might even show throwing this in to Power BI. One other important aspect here, so some of you may be familiar with Hockey App or some other great services and tools out there. One of the things that I love about Hockey App that we can also do with Application Insights is this idea of custom events and custom metrics. So here's a couple of here's some examples that we're using. We've got this great image upload scenario that we're using, this image upload web app. But if people want to upload adult content, we don't want to put that out there and have it be searched, and we want to check for that metric. So we can have a metric that says, is adult. Or we want to know every time that a file gets uploaded or that a user authenticates. If we want to know all that kind of information, things that are specific to our application, we can throw in some of these custom events and custom metrics. The other thing that I like that I wish I had an entire hour to present on is the Application Insights analytics. Bunch of people don't even know that this is available. It's in some ways it's kind of tricky even to get to. It's not readily apparent that this analytics piece is even out there. But the analytics gives us the ability not just to view this information, but we actually have a query language that we can really do whatever we want. We can look at this data, we can join it to other data, we can even join it to external sources. We can render all kinds of visualizations. We could say, pull this data in, join it with this, show it in a pie chart, show it in a line graph. And we could also even take and export all this out to Power BI. So in the analytics tool, you've created some big complicated thing or not complicated, and it's exactly the way that you want it. And now you'd love to have your boss, your manager, some stakeholder in a project see this data real time as the information changes, or be able to refresh it on some cycle. We just pull all this in, it'll actually create the Power BI query, advanced query code for you, and all you do is basically copy and paste all of that in. And now you can stick that in a great dashboard for your marketing people or whoever. So as I mentioned, there's this analytics query language. This is a ramp up for a little bit for some folks to learn some of this. It's very similar to what we're going to use in Power BI. It's similar to the query languages in other scenarios. It's not similar, for example, to writing a link query, language integrated query. It's not exactly similar to writing T-SQL, right? So there's a little bit of a ramp up for some developers. But what I've seen is that, you know, an hour and a half of working with it and wrecking up your queries and then starting over, most people get a pretty medium level familiarity with analytics query language after that amount of time. And it's going to support all kinds of stuff there. You've got all kinds of ways to aggregate data. You've got all your number, date, time, string. You can have arrays of objects and dynamic objects. I mean, so what you can pull in and query against could even be an external resource that is coming back to you as some unknown object. We can have a dynamic object that comes back and do some analysis on that, just like we can in C Sharp. So notes for ASP.NET Core for Application Insights. And these are just heads up for you folks that are watching. And again, this may not be true by the time we get to the full version, but in the release candidate, the NuGet packages for Application Insights are a little bit different, and sometimes they're hard to find. All of these services will all have .ASP.NET Core, usually in the middle of them. So it'll be applicationinsights.aspnetcore.something that you'll have to pull in here. I have found that they're not always found quickly searching through the NuGet Package Manager, but they are available. In fact, I probably have 40 NuGet packages in the solution, all .NET Core available, which means I know they're all going to port over to Linux and Mac without a problem. There is a modification in the code that's required. One of those I showed you in that package, the CS project file, in order to get Application Insights working. You'll have to change that fallback. At least as of last night, so this has been true for a while, at least as of last night, I do not see the ability to use the super cool live metrics stream with .NET Core. When you go out to the live metrics stream, we're not even going to cover it, but when you go out to live metrics stream with an app that's been created with Visual Studio 2017 ASP.NET Core, it will give you a versioning. It says you need a higher version. Even in pre-release, I don't see a higher version that's going to work with live metrics stream. This may not be totally accurate. There may be somebody who knows how to do this, but I have talked to about 9 people on Microsoft Teams, and they say, no, they don't believe that that's available yet. But again, this could change tomorrow. And again, the other thing is that this is integrated with Visual Studio. So what do you think about that, Jeff?
So I like it, and I think I'd like to see it work, especially custom events, if you feel like doing that, because in terms of instrumenting your application and getting the insights, I can't imagine without custom events. It's not that it wouldn't be useful, but I can certainly extend its usefulness with custom events.
Okay, great. So let's do this. Here's what I want to do. Let's go back to Visual Studio and add a couple lines of code that address getting Visual Studio ready for Application Insights. Let's go to the portal and make sure that we see what we need to do in the portal. We'll go to the Azure portal and look at Application Insights. Let's just pop in a couple of custom events as well. And then we'll go out and show what that would look like in both the Visual Studio IDE, what it looks like out in the portal, and then I'm gonna go into analytics real quick. Now, you can't stop me because this is just a phenomenal thing. So I don't care if we run out of time. Well, that's not true. But I'm gonna go in at least to show everybody how to get to analytics and what that's gonna look like and how to write some of these queries real quick. So let's do that. Again, if you're following along as a viewer, you guys can fast forward if you want through the slides to see where we're going next with this. When the slides are not on the screen, you've got them handy there for you. So let's flip back over to Visual Studio. And we're going to go back, because remember, we love this idea of middleware. .NET Core has nothing on it unless we add it. We've got this idea of middleware here. A couple of lines of code I'm going to add here in Configure Services. Actually, I don't want that one there. In Configure Services, I'm going to add that single light. Basically, in the services, I'm just saying add Application Insights Telemetry to the configuration. And then down here in my configure, I'm going to add these two lines of code. This is middleware. I'm saying use Application Insights request telemetry. And then I'm actually going to move this down here. I'm actually going to say use Application Insights exception telemetry, which is different. Again, this is very granular. I can just say start tracking whatever I want to have tracking. And so this is going to be the standard thing you're going to want to add, request telemetry. I put this in under my exception handler. I feel like I get better information when it's under my exception handler here. So, but it's really just those two lines of code. So I added this here in configure services, those two lines of code there. And then I do one other thing, because if you're a developer out there and you're going to do this, one of the things you're going to notice right off the bat, if this is a brand new project, you haven't created the resource, the Application Insights resource yet, you're going to say, I don't see any data, where's all my data? And there's going to be a delay. One of the ways you can get around this, I mean, you can be patient, but most developers are not. We're all hyped up on caffeine and everything else. We want it now. You can put this line in here. This is essentially saying, if I'm in development, if this environment is in development, push the Application Insight data over right away. I'm telling it developer mode equals true, and so this will give me that data right away. So let's take a look at what that would look like. First through the portal. Excuse me, first through the IDE. So we'll load up Tagger. And we see that we've got Application Insights that show up. Let's say search telemetry. And I'm going to click this search bar, and I'm going to tell you I'm not going to freak out that nothing's showing up. And here's why. And this happens every time right now with the release candidate. I don't know if this happens. I don't know if this will happen always. But in the release candidate, it doesn't automatically connect to my telemetry. So what I have to do is tell it to connect to a resource from Azure the first time. This is just the first time that I load this up. So I've got this telemetry out there is being written to an Azure Application Insights resource. I'm going to select that. And now, if I select search, it's going to grab all of that information and bring it back. Of course, like everything, the first time it loads up. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you just sit on this, if you just sit in this view in this Search Explorer and go through stuff, you're going to find all kinds of great information. And you can break this information down however you want. So you talked about these custom events. I can say just show me custom events. And you'll see that some will show up here, and I'll show you how I'm adding them. So I've got a custom event here called file added, file added, file added. So I've added a custom event that just says every time somebody uploads a file, just add a file added event, or when the user's authenticated. Let's take a look at where we stick in that code and how easy that is. So I've just created this little helper, this telemetry helper. It doesn't even really need to be a helper. I just like to put these into classes because it's just these two lines of code. I've got one that says start tracking this event and one that says track this metric. So the difference here would be an event would be file was added. A metric would be something that may typically would be numeric, or some kind of a rudimentary thing like we're tracking if somebody uploads an image that has adult content. We don't care at all. They can see that all they want, but we want to not have that searchable, for example, and we want to keep a metric on that. So if something gets uploaded that's adult content, we mark it, or if something is tagged and has 20 tags, we mark that as a metric. You know, tag count, 20 tags, things like that. And so if we look to see where we're calling this, find all references, you'll see I've got this upload image that we're going to look at in a minute. And when that's complete, that's all I do. Add event, file added. And again, that's going to immediately add that. Since I've been developer equals true mode, if not, there's a slight delay. I don't know what it is, maybe 30 seconds, 45 seconds, but not immediate. So if we look at this code, right now, the entire process is complete against Azure SQL. So if we look at this code right here, what you'll see happening is when somebody uploads an image, when I uploaded that image earlier, it's gonna grab the longitude latitude, and I'm doing this because we want to report on it later in Power BI. I'm gonna grab the longitude latitude, and I'm gonna take that file that came through the drop zone, that cool little drop zone that I brought in with Bower, and I'm just gonna add it to a list, and then I'm going to pop it in. Go to that next one there. I'm going to pop it into the database. So what's going to happen here is, for now, for this part of the process, I'm just going to stick that binary out in the Azure database. This is a very old-fashioned, old-school way to do it. So somebody's going to take an image, I'm going to take the binary, I'm going to take the caption, I'm going to take the tags, I'm going to take the bytes, I'm just going to throw it out into Azure SQL. Excuse me. So this is a way that you could do it. This is a very common way to do it. But there's some better ways that we can do that that we'll look at. But for now, this is all that's happening. People upload images. It grabs those images, throws them out to SQL Server, and then I'm getting the telemetry from that in application resources. So it's a pretty cool scenario here. And one of the most important things here is this is just a start. As we go through these sessions, we're really going to build on this. In fact, if I walk through this process now, we'll say, oh, wait, holy smokes, Scott Guthrie's calling. Okay, folks, hold on. Sorry about that. Hey, Scott. Yeah, you know I'm in a live stream, right? Oh, you're watching. Okay, yes. Yeah, okay. Yes, your redness. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll do it. I loved you in Minority Report, by the way. Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Holy
moly. Well,
that's
interesting.
Yeah. So that was Scott Guthrie. So he said I love what you guys are doing. This is super cool. I can't wait to see it. He said, but there's a bunch of people watching out there, and I want you to push this out to them and let them start using it right now. So let's just do that real quick before we end this session. So I'm going to publish it. I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to publish this out. This is a really cool solution that right now is just in its infancy. I mean, it's doing cool stuff, but it's not doing near what it's going to do by the time we're done. So Scott Guthrie, am I supposed to call him Mr. Guthrie? Scott Guthrie said, this is great, everything else, but there's a mandate. You're going to push this out. I want people all around the world to be able to use this. So let's just do that. So I'm going to publish this whole thing out to you guys watching at home. We'll just say publish. And I'm going to say web deploy. Oh, before I click this button, I'm just going to tell you, remember, we're working with an RC. This is a release candidate. I have noticed under certain circumstances on the publish screen when I do things, you know, in a little bit goofy way, it may lock up Visual Studio. I just have to close it, bring it back up again, and then I just do it again. Also, you'll see that this publish is wrapping here. It's because I bumped up all my environment fonts. It doesn't look this crappy in real life. It's just looking that way now. So let's just go ahead and publish this here and keep our fingers crossed. Pull that up there. And so this part of the publish process should look familiar to everybody. Everybody's familiar with this. This is almost exactly like you would have done it on Visual Studio 2015 Update 3. Wait till they see what we do later, though. It's going to be great.
And you're publishing to an Azure web app, is that
so
correct?
I'm publishing all of this as an ASP.NET Core application written with Visual Studio 2017, and I'm publishing it to an Azure web app right now that Scott Guthrie said I need to make live. So he set up an alias out there for people so that they can access that. Okay, so this is now live out there, and it looks like the alias he set up is tagger.it or taggerit. So right now, if you're watching this, you want to go out there and you can try some of your photos, go to tagger.it, The Italians must love this, that everybody uses their domain extension, IT, for everything. So go out there right now, practice, see if you can hammer on it. I don't even know what kind of scale it has or what it'll support. It may crash right away. I hope that it doesn't. Oh, you know, there's thousands of you guys watching. Go out and hit it, upload a photo or two, see how that performs for you. You can hit it. We're going to take about a 10-minute break to get ready for the second session. You guys can follow along in your slide presentation so that you get ready for what we're going to do next. We're going to take a little break, get ready for that, be back in about 10 minutes. How's that?
See you soon.
All right. See you soon.